tonight's program, Gender 101, Understanding Gender Diversity. What is the value of gender diversity in organizations, politics, and society? Educating about gender diversity increases the awareness and understanding of a wide range of gender variations in children, adolescents, and adults, spanning family support, building community, increasing awareness, and improving the well-being for people of all gender identities and expressions. Our guest is Max Rorty, whom is an authority on best practices for health providers working with transgender and gender non-normative people. Max facilitates trainings for large and small groups of professionals eager to provide transgender-sensitive care. Trainings include best practices for intake forms, demographic collection, and infrastructure for trans clients. She is the author of Transgender Patients and Their Families and co-author of TransSafe Employee Space. She has an upcoming presentation, Transgender Patient Care, All You Wanted to Know But You Were Afraid to Ask, being held at Cottage Hospital February 17th. More information on Max and her work can be found at maxrorty.com. That's maxrorty.com. Welcome, Max. Hi, and how are you?
Great. I'm excited to be here. Thanks so much for the invitation and the chance.
Let's tell the audience a little bit about your background and also about the event you'll be having in Santa Barbara very soon.
Thank you. I am Max. I am a medical social worker. I've been doing medical social work for 10 years. And in my capacity as a social worker in hospitals, I got to hang out with a lot of doctors. And in my identity as a lesbian, and I got to hang out with a lot of transgender people. And when I was doing both of those things at the same time, I realized that my transgender friends were scared of my doctor friends, and my doctor friends were scared of my transgender friends. And so about 5 years ago, I started doing presentations for doctors about how to take care of transgender people without making terrible mistakes, and after we make mistakes, how to apologize nicely. And so I've been doing trainings of that sort for medical professionals and mental health professionals, and as well as council members, politicians, elected officials, educators, and businesses for about 5 years.
Great. Answered my question. How long you've been doing that?
And yeah.
Why in the world did you get involved? I know you said from your background as a lesbian and living in the Bay Area, which is quite a diverse community compared, I mean, in my mind, you know.
Compared to almost everyone.
Yeah, and so, and your skills in LCSW and social worker, I guess, maybe you just thought this is, because of all your friends, this is the way to go?
Yeah.
Or did your friends educate you first?
I learned about the degree to which my friends were scared to go to doctors. Specifically, I had a friend who, at 65, my friend Michael, who had never, ever, ever, ever considered the possibility of needing to have bottom surgery, 65 years old, computer programmer, balding, goatee. He, like a lot of transgender men, like 99% of transgender men, retained a vulva and wanted to turn his vulva into a penis, and that project required $100,000. So he sold his house to do it. And we asked him why, after 40 years of living as a man, would he suddenly want to make this new step? And the answer he gave us was that he didn't want to go to hospitals and nursing homes with incongruent anatomy. And I realized that he was going to sell his house to make this money to do this surgery because he was scared of medical professionals, among whom I count myself. And I felt sure that if the medical professionals knew that this was how scared Michael was of being in their care, that they would be ready for him, that they would take better care of him. And so I started doing these presentations to make sure that when Michael and all of the transgender women who are also 65 this year, who are also entering the age when we need more hospital care, to make sure that transgender people would find that the clinicians that were taking care of them weren't dangerous or scary or mistaken about them.
Excellent. Well said. So maybe let's back up again for the listeners. I kind of think of this presentation as more like for the listening audience in radio and podcast, kind of gender 101. How to celebrate diversity and why we celebrate diversity and why we educate. So why is there a need to educate? You gave one great reason. It covered a lot. To give the background for people who are maybe not familiar with female to male, transgenders, or male to female, is there a place we can start? Kind of a stepping stone for our listeners.
Yeah. So the way I do this in my presentations is I do a lot of jumping around. So I will try to demonstrate that on the radio newly. So I'm Max. I am a cisgender woman, which means that I have the same gender identity as the sex that was assigned to me at birth. And so over here, doodly-doodly-doo, is my sex assigned at birth. And my sex assigned at birth is female. When my family looked at me when I was born, they said, it's a girl. And then over here, doodly-doodly-doo, is my gender identity. And my gender identity, the way that I've always felt about who I am, is I have always felt that I'm a girl. And so because my sex assigned at birth over here and my gender identity over here are the same, which is to say girl and female, that means that I'm a cisgender person. So my friend Michael, when he was born, his family looked at him and said, it's a girl. So his sex assigned at birth, doodly doodly doo, was female, and his gender identity, doodly doodly doo, is male. So all of his life he has felt male, and because his sex assigned at birth is not the same as his gender identity, he is described as transgender. In specific, he is a trans man, and which is to say that his gender identity is male, and then the adjective that we use to describe people whose identity is not the same as sex assigned at birth is trans.
Excellent. Very well done.
Thanks.
That brings up, I think, the initial point here, concept in society and in culture, is that we get the collapse of this difference between gender and sex. And we define people who are identifying as this particular gender more mindful about these differences. So how would you be training, let's say, a physician, like in this event that you have coming up, which we'll talk about? How would you ask them in a couple words how they could train themselves? How would they help to identify someone and not make the mistake of collapsing sex and gender?
Yeah, it's harder for physicians than it is for other people, because my friend Michael, as I say, is, you know, a balding, bearded computer programmer who is 65, and nobody knows that he has a vulva except for his doctors. So it's perfectly all right for everybody in the world to say to Michael, he, him, his. Nobody ever gets his gender wrong. But doctors are in the circumstance of needing to be able to evaluate all of Michael's anatomy. And so it's difficult, it's more difficult for people who are looking at a vulva to say he, him, his. And so doctors have to do this very carefully and be able to make mistakes and apologize when they make mistakes. Part of my training for doctors, aside from the 101, which is to say sex is not the same thing as gender, all of us have a birth sex, a sex assigned at birth, all of us, and totally separately from that, all of us have a gender identity. And totally separate from that, all of us love somebody and have a love orientation. And those things are not connected to each other. And so trying to do the 101 with the doctors, and then trying to say, this is hard, doctors. You're going to have to treat women with testicular cancer. You're going to have to take care of men with ovarian cancer. You're going to have to protect the prostate health of aging women. This is a difficult thing. When you do that, you're going to have to be immaculate with the use of pronouns. You're going to be able to practice saying, I'm taking care of her prostate health. I'm taking care of his ovarian treatments. And those tasks are difficult. And so the job of the doctor is to practice and then mess up and then apologize politely and then keep going.
I recall a presentation you made a couple of winters ago. It was quite enlightening for me, but you did spend quite a bit of time on how to apologize. And mm-hmm. I remember there were several physicians or medical professionals, and they were raising their hands a lot, like, do we need to apologize every time, or do we really need to do this? There's a bit of a practice, I guess.
Yeah. The reason that I focus on it so much is because transgender people have historically received terrible apologies. And what I am thinking of when I say that is I'm thinking of the kind of apology that is a punishment. So, I'm sorry I called you he, but you look like a man, which is not an apology so much as an insult on top of an injury.
Yes, the butt came up.
Yeah, the butt came up. That's a nice phrase. I'm going to use that next time.
That happens in many situations socially, Rupert, that Michael had mm-hmm. of going to medical professionals basically because of this. There's no empowerment. And that's really, you're saying, the juice of how people can thrive or not, because mm-hmm. eventually they do need medical attention.
Yeah.
Or they choose to.
Yeah. And for a lot of transgender people, they will by necessity be educating their medical professionals in their own life and their own care. And that's a very vulnerable situation to be in, to take yourself to the expert and need the expert's help. And the trouble that we are can encounter is that we come to an expert who's not able to be vulnerable and be open, curious, and questioning. And we need our professionals to say, I'm going to mess this up, but I want to do this right. And then have our professionals be able to say, I messed up, but I'm still here. I'm trying to do a good job. Being able to apologize professionally is part of being able to be a really excellent clinician for transgender people.
Hmm. That's actually very empathetic, the way you say that. I could see that being a powerful way to make a relationship between a physician and a patient in any sense. Maybe a mystique or a myth about that in a lot of people's relationships just in general with the medical community. Want someone to see them. How does a transgender person empower the medical community on their own? This is the pronoun I like.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. I'm this person. This is the name that I want you to use. Even though our medical records require often for insurance purposes that we use legal names or birth names, it's important for doctors and patients to be able to say, I have a name that I want you to use. I want you to use it with me every time. I have a pronoun that I want you to use. And when I say pronoun, what I mean is I'm Max. When people are talking about me, I want them to say her, she, hers. So my pronoun is she, her, hers. And all of the time that my doctors are talking about me, I want them to be referring to me as a she, her, hers. So hopefully all doctors will know that knowing somebody's real name, the name they want you to use, when I say real name, I mean the name that is most important to that person at that time, and their pronoun, that in that knowing both of those things and trying to get those consistently right every time is a big part of keeping yourself open to being available to your patients.
Remind the listeners, we're here speaking with Max Rorty, and she's a transgender advocate and educator. That you have an event coming up here, a special event called Transgender Patient Care.
Thank you, yes.
Perhaps you can speak about that.
Yeah, I'm interested in publicizing this widely because it's a presentation for physicians. And I wish that everybody who had a transgender friend or family member would tell their doctor to come, because I do this work in this town. I've done presentations in a lot of different settings. And the number one question that I get asked afterwards, and it happens every week, somebody calls me, writes me, emails me, Facebooks me, says to me on the street, I need to find a doctor for me or for my child or for my parent. Can you help me find a doctor who's comfortable taking care of transgender people? And the answer is, I don't have any doctors that are out about taking care of transgender people. There are doctors in our community who are taking care of transgender women in their senior years. There are trans doctors who are taking care of children who are trying to stop their puberty. There are doctors in town who are taking care of teenagers and young adults who are transitioning, but none of those doctors are making their skill set and their availability known to the community, so that when transgender students come to UCSB, they don't know where to go. Or when family members have a child who is interested in transgender identity, they don't have a pediatrician they can see. So all of our friends in Santa Barbara are traveling outside of this town to get medical care. And I would like to make sure that we can make a group of doctors here in Santa Barbara that are public about their willingness to learn what it takes to be a trans ally, to be a transgender sensitive provider.
That's extraordinary. And when is that event?
The presentation is going to be on Tuesday the 17th at 12:15 in the La Cumbra Conference Room on the first floor of Cottage Hospital. It will be an hour-long presentation, and all of the physicians in the community are invited.
Great. And this is one of many that you've put on in this community and other communities?
Yes, I've done presentations for the Board of Supervisors in Ventura. I've done presentations for Kaiser in a couple of different towns. This is the first time I've been able to talk to Santa Barbara physicians directly. Most of my work thus far has been with the mental health community. So I'm happy to report that we now have a very strong community of mental health providers who are comfortable taking care of transgender women and transgender men and trans-questioning children. We've got a great cohort of people who are working together to make trans community in this town. And the next, and I think last thing that we need, is to have medical providers who are doing right by transgender patients.
Thank you for spearheading and doing that extraordinary gift to the community. You've been here in Santa Barbara how long?
3.5 years.
How do you found a large transgender community here, many or interacted with many?
So my circle, because I'm a cisgender lesbian woman, is in overlaps with queer people, broadly speaking. And my work as a presenter and an author on the subject means that I get to be very visible and a draw for people who are interested in this kind of work. So I'm pleased to say that Santa Barbara is currently supporting, I think, 3 or 4 social and events-driven groups for the transgender community. So there's a support group at Pacific Pride. There's a meetup group that's doing social events, going to museums, going to theaters, going to clubs, having coffee clutches. That's a meetup group for transgender people here in Santa Barbara. In addition to that, we have started a chapter of PFLAG for parents and friends of lesbian and gay people. And then just this week, we started a program called Trans Youth, which is a support group for parents of transgender children. All of these groups are booming right now. Everybody is out and about. Everybody is socializing together. There's a lot more awareness of transgender children's needs, transgender adult socializing. We have a vibrant community in Santa Barbara.
Good to hear that Santa Barbara is not far from some of the metropolitan areas when it comes to gender diversity. On that topic, would you want to talk a little about that whole umbrella of transgender, just to maybe make it a little more clear about a lot of differentiation under that umbrella that people call transgender?
Yeah, transgender is a great term for allies in the community to use. We use transgender when we're describing people who identify as transsexuals, and we use transgender when we're talking about people who identify as gender non-normative. Transgender is a good word for people to use and to know how to use rather than any other term, because it covers a big umbrella and it's a widely accepted term, unlike other terms that we don't use anymore or as often. We always use the word transgender instead of transgendered, because gendering is something that people have a gender. Gender isn't something that is done to another person. And so we use transgender to describe people who feel as if their identity is different from the identity that they were assigned at birth, or people whose gender presentation the way that they appear in the world, the way that they want to be seen in the world, is different from the sex assigned at their birth. So we use transgender to describe people who are going from one perceived identity to another visible identity. And we use transgender for people who are walking around in the world comfortably looking like an androgynous person. So for people who it's not really clear when you're looking at them what their identity is, those people also fall under the transgender umbrella. They're generally referred to as gender non-normative people. And those people, like all people, have a gender identity. Everybody, if you ask them, says, "Oh, I feel as if I am a woman," or "I feel as if I am a transgender man." So gender identity is something that everybody feels very strongly, but it's not always easy to tell what somebody's gender identity is by looking at them. And that's why we make such a point of making sure that people ask their new acquaintances that they're not really sure about, "What is your pronoun preference?"
There's quite a few people on the planet that don't necessarily subscribe to the old way of looking at gender, which is male and female.
Yes.
And that it's kind of hidden at times because people present themselves maybe not significantly as those genders we're used to.
That's true.
You've met people, and do they feel really alive when they're identified in the way they want to be identified? Do you see kind of a difference in people's aliveness?
Yeah.
Their health, their mental health.
Yes, yes, and their ability to connect with other people, right? The worst thing, and I say this to you as a medical social worker, the worst thing that can happen to somebody is that they would be isolated. It's always the worst indicator for health. It's the worst indicator for recovery from illness. It's why there are medical social workers. If you don't have people in your life, then we rush to your aid. So for transgender people, or for people whose gender identity isn't immediately clear to themselves or others, the worst thing that can happen is that they don't connect with other people. And so when you have an encounter with somebody and you say, "Hello, I'm Max. My pronoun is she, her, hers. Please tell me your name and how I should refer to you," then that has opened a gate so that there can be communication between us. Which sometimes that gate stays closed, because when we see people where we're not entirely sure about their gender identity, we're scared to approach them for fear of offending them. And so the task for all allies, for doctors as well as human beings generally, is to say in an open-hearted way, "I see you, and I would like to know how to treat you and respect you the way that you are wanting to be seen. So please tell me, how shall I refer to you?" Using the words "he," or using the words "she," or using the words "they," any pronoun that you would like, so that we can connect with each other.
I'm assuming you have a website and with links to some of these other organizations you had mentioned, like Pacific Pride and this Trans Youth Group.
Yes, I'm so excited about the Trans Youth Group. I will refer you to my website at maxrorty.com, and that's maxrorty.com, where I hope that you'll find all of the current projects and programs that are happening in this town, and where I hope that we will soon be planning a Transgender Day of Visibility.
In closing, your hopes and your ideas and your vision for a gender diverse community in Santa Barbara, what would you like to be seeing?
I would love to have some public events, some park parties with some pizza and cake that celebrated people's experiences of having new birthdays. So just as people are beginning a transition from an old life to a new life, just as people are starting out with their new idea of how they want to be, I wish that we could celebrate that together, that we could have a party for people to say, "You're starting hormone therapy. Congratulations, hooray!" Or, "You're getting surgery that you've wanted for a long time. We're so happy for you." Or, "You're 13 years old and you figured out that you want to be referred to as they. And we're going to do it. and to give everybody cake and to give everybody balloons and to have this project be an event that the community supports and celebrates together.
Well, Max, it's been really excellent speaking with you. We hope to see you in the community more, and hopefully a lot of people, physicians, will come out for your event, Transgender Patient Care, and that's Tuesday, February 17th at Cottage Hospital in the La Cumbra Conference Room. More information, once again, at your website.
MaxRorty.com.
Thanks, Max.
My pleasure.